Everybody, very appropriate this week's parsha, the death of Sarah Imenu. Vayavo Avraham lispod l'sara v'livkosa. Avraham Avinu, as a dedicated husband, makes all the arrangements for his wife's burial, and he gives a proper eulogy for her. As our country is focusing on all of the levayas, all of the funerals that are going on this week, I thought le'ilui nishmasam, it was an opportunity for us just to talk about the halacha a little bit that regards to a funeral and a hesped. So the Shulchan Aruch in Yerideya says, Mitzvah gedola lahasped al hameis karoi. A person is really supposed to go out of their way when they are the one who is entrusted with giving a eulogy over someone who passed away. They should do it properly. They should say really the attributes of the one who passed away. They should give it over clearly. V'chacham v'chassid. If a person who is being buried is one who is a chacham, them as kir lahem chachmasam v'chasidusam. Everybody who passes away has a right to be eulogized in the way they led their life. When we speak about hespedim, the Gemara raises a very basic and important question, and that is a Gemara Maseches Sanhedrin, daf mem vav amad beis. Ibar lehu hespeda. When a person gives a eulogy, is that considered to be yikra dechaye, or is that yikra deshichvi? What does it mean? When we give a eulogy, do we assume that that is being given in honor and respect and recognition of the person who passed away? Is it for their honor, their dignity? Or is it because of Yikra Dechai? Is it in order that we should have the opportunity to give comfort and to sympathize and aid the one who is now grieving over the loss of the relative? That's what the Gemara asks. It's a very nice feeling when we are the relatives of a person and we hear other people share nice thoughts and nice feelings about that individual who we loved so much, and the Gemara is not sure what is the reason why we give hespedim. The Gemara asks, what's the difference? The practice is we give hespedim, so who cares what the reason is? Well, the Gemara says it makes a difference where heicha de'amar al taspiduni. If somebody leaves over clear instructions and guidelines that they do not want any eulogies upon their demise, do we listen to such a request? If the only reason why the eulogies are being offered is because we want to show our respect for the one who passed away, then part of showing respect is that we should also respect their wishes and not give a eulogy if they asked specifically not to have one. But if the reason why we give a hesped is because of the dignity that is deserving to those who are alive in the room, and we want to all come together and give them some kind of comfort, then what does it matter if the dead person had left an instruction not to give a hesped? We still have an obligation toward those who are alive. And you don't have a right to say on my behalf that you don't want a hesped. It's not really something that's being done for you. And the Gemara comes to the conclusion that the hesped is a yikra deshichvi. The reason why we give hespedim is out of respect to the one who has passed away. And therefore the Rambam says, ha hesped kavod hameis. Whenever we give a hesped, it is out of respect to the one who has died. And therefore he says, Imtziva shalo yasbiduhu, if somebody leaves clear instructions that they should not have a eulogy, ein softimoso, we honor that request and we do not have any hespedim, because after all, the hespedim were only made to give honor and dignity to that person. This is also the psak in Shulchan Aruch in two places, in Yerideya and Hilchas Avelos, as well as in Choshen Mishpat, where he talks about the instructions of a sick person at the end of life. The Shulchan Aruch writes in both places that if a person at the end of life says they do not want any hespedim, we have to honor that request and we do not have hespedim. Now, just a point of clarification about this that the Gemara mentions here, Rabbi Shlomo Zalman Auerbach picks up on a very interesting issue, and that is, he says, Hine yikra dechai, if we would have assumed that a hesped is being done out of respect to the one who's alive, so then it makes a lot of sense to us what that means. We're all human beings. We all have a little bit of arrogance. We all have a little bit of feeling. And therefore, says Rav Shlomo Zalman, it makes sense that when my relative passes away, I want others to come and show respect to me. And when your relative passes away, you expect that people are going to come and show respect to you. That's the way we work while we're alive. But after the person dies, says Rav Shlomo Zalman, how are you giving honor and dignity to a person that's no longer here? They don't feel it, they don't see it, they don't understand it. So says Rav Shlomo Zalman, what does the Gemara mean? That we all gather together to pay our respects to the one who passed away, it doesn't mean anything to them anymore. And I'm not sure what to make of this comment, because every time you go to a levaya, they always say, and we know that mom or dad is looking down on all of us and is so proud. Shlomo Zalman is saying, why would mom or dad waste their time looking down at this? What are they interested in? If they have the opportunity to look up at God and spend time with Him, why would they be busy with all of us who are just making up stories in the room? So therefore, Shlomo Zalman writes that really what's happening is Not that it gives dignity and honor to the one who passed away. Once they passed away, they don't care about this anymore. This is only human beings care for such things while they're alive. Says Rav Shlomo Zalman, what we mean when the Gemara says it's Yikra the Shichvi is, it has a to'eles leniftar. It means it will help the one who has passed away. How will it help them? If you share positive attributes of the life that the person lived, and one person in the room will be inspired or will take life a little bit more seriously as a result, that is a to'eles leniftar. That is a schus that will go down in history in the name of that person. God will look at that and say, I expect that that person will get the credit because after all, they were the ones responsible for inspiring others as a result of their death. And says Rav Shlomo Zalman, that's what the Gemara means when it says, we paskin that a hesped is yikra the shichvi. We assume that a hesped is really meant to be for the honor and the dignity of the one who has passed away. It doesn't mean they need our honor or they need our dignity. They don't care about this anymore. What they do need is one extra schus that can possibly help them in the Olam HaEmes. And therefore, when we give a hesped, and it's a meaningful one, it's not just about the checkers games that they used to play and all the other things, but we say something that's meaningful to the people in the room, and somebody will be inspired, that, says Rav Shlomo Zalman, is what it means, that it's a yikra di shichvi. So the Gemara then, after it gets into this discussion about hesped, the Gemara then moves on and wants to know, what about nihuge avelus? What about, how far do we take this? Let's say we know that the custom is we sit shiva when somebody passes away. Are we sitting shiva in order that the ones who are alive have the opportunity to spend time with their friends and their loved ones? Is it yikra dechayi? Or sitting shiva really to show the honor that we display toward the one who passed away? How is this to be understood? So the Gemara has a very fascinating halacha, and that is, what if, God forbid, you have a person who passes away, ve'ein lo menachamin, passes away, he has no family. No one's alive anymore, no children, no spouse, nobody. So there's nobody who's going to sit shiva. So I would have said, okay, there's nobody to sit shiva, there's no one to sit shiva. Says the Gemara, no. Holchim asara b'nei adam v'yoshvim b'mekomo. The Rambam quotes this halacha and he says, if a person passes away and heaven forbid they have no relatives at all who are going to sit shiva for them, says the Gemara, quoted in halacha, we send 10 people to the place where the person lived and we have them sit shiva on behalf of this nifter. Well, what does that seem to indicate? It seems to tell us that the point of a shiva really is that it should be in some way in the memory of the person who passed away. It's not only for the people who are alive that they should have the opportunity to spend time with their friends and gain consolation. That's not all it is. A shiva is also for the purpose of the one who passed away. And therefore, in our case, even when there are no relatives who are supposed to sit shiva, we need to make sure that a shiva happens in order that that person should be able to have the same opportunity that other people have as well. This is what the Gemara says, and it seems to be a clear indication that shiva is really about the niftar, it's not so much about those who are related, who are now alive. Rabbi Kiva Eger picks up on this point, and he leads us to a machlokes between the Rambam and the Ramban, who seem to disagree whether the nature of shiva is such that it is for the honor and the dignity of the one who has passed away, or it is for the to'eles hachayim, it's for the people who are left alive, and that is the question that he has. And the Ramah says, "Imtziva shelo yisablu alav." What if a parent doesn't want their children to take off a week of work, doesn't want that everybody should inconvenience themselves and fly all over the world to be Menachem Avel? Says the parent before they pass away, I don't want anyone to sit shiva for me. I love you anyway. It's okay. I just don't want you to go out of your way. So the halacha is, says the Ramah, ain shomen lo. That's not an appropriate thing for the parent to say, because really, what? What does that seem to indicate? It seems that the Ramah is understanding that the reason why we have shiva is because of those who are alive. So Rabbi Kiva Eger says, not so simple, that's not so clear, and therefore he says this is a little bit up in the air. There's an interesting issue that was raised when Rabbi Avadya Yosef went to be Menachem Avel by Rabbi Eliashiv when he was sitting shiva for his wife. So he came into the room, and while he was there, one of the other Gedolei Yisrael called on the phone to be Menachem Avel. He was too weak, he wasn't feeling well, he wasn't able to come in person. So he called Rabbi Eliashiv to be Menachem Avel, and he asked him, before we get into the conversation of Nichum Avelim, I'd like to know, do I fulfill the mitzvah of Nichum Avelim while I'm talking to you on the phone, and I don't come in person? Is that going to be sufficient? It happens to be, whenever I go to be Menachem Avel, and the Avel is sitting there on the phone with people, while there are others sitting around, happens to be slightly uncomfortable when everybody else is just sitting there and waiting for them to get off the phone. So it's an issue that you have to deal with anyway. But in principle, the halacha wants to know, am I able to fulfill my mitzvah of Nicham Aveilim by just calling on the phone, or do I have to actually come in person? So Rabbi Yashiv was sitting in the presence of his contemporary, of Rabbi Avadia Yosef, and he said, "Nu, my friend Rabbi Avadia, what do you say?" So Rabbi Avadia turned back and he said, "You know, I think that this really should be dependent on the nature of Shiva. Is the reason for Shiva because we want to display honor and dignity to the one who passed away? Or is it because we want to comfort and console the one who is left alive? If it's just to give comfort and solace to the one who is here, so then calling on the phone is also going to bring about that result. You're showing that you care. You're showing that you're being thoughtful to them, that you're trying to be a part of their suffering. That should be sufficient. On the other hand, if it's to show the dignity and the honor to the one who passed away, who's going to see it when you call on the phone? The way to show that is people coming to the house, people showing how much this person meant to them, how much they miss him, how much they no longer are going to have the opportunity to be with that person." So that was the understanding of Rabbi Avadia Yosef. Maybe that also would play into this issue as well. So generally we assume that Shiva is going to be observed regardless, because we generally assume that it would seem that Shiva is something that we have to do anyway, because it has a little bit of a mixture of both. Perhaps it's L'Kavod HaChayim, perhaps it's L'Kavod HaMesim, and therefore the Ramah adopts the opinion that a person does not have a right to tell his children that you're not going to sit Shiva for me. We would not listen to such a instruction. How far does this go? The Stechemed has a discussion about a woman who said that she doesn't want her children to be Noeg Yud Beis Chodesh for her. She said, "Look, you want to sit Shiva for me, I understand you want your friends to come. Shloshim, okay, it's just a month. But you're going to inconvenience yourself a whole year, 12 months? You're really not going to listen to music, you're not going to go to weddings, you're going to make sure to do all the things that Aveilim do, Rahman al-Islam, for 12 months." And he said that this woman was very uncomfortable with it, and she thought that there's no reason why my children should have to suffer through this. Rabbi Kiva Eger quotes this as well, and it's not exactly clear whether or not a parent has a right to absolve their children of the obligation that they have to observe the Yud Beis Chodesh. So this was a major shaila. Many achronim are mekel. I know that when my grandfather passed away, my father's father, so for many years before he passed away, he always used to talk to us very openly about what's going to happen at the end. He was a very sweet person, and he said it in a very nice way, but he always said that he knows that his son, my father, is a very important person and has a lot of obligations, communal obligations, and he said, "I don't think it's fair that my son should have to hold himself back for a whole year. Why should his students have to suffer? If they want him to be at their wedding, and they feel that it will be meaningful to them to have my son there, why should my son, because of his honor for me, have to make his students feel uncomfortable by him not attending their wedding?" So he told all of us in advance that he wants that after he passes away, whenever that will be, and he had a very nice long life. So my grandfather said that my father should not observe Yud Beis Chodesh for him, because he's mochel on the Yud Beis Chodesh. So my father told us that, strictly speaking, technically we would assume you have a right to honor such a request. And he said that he really would have had the right to go to weddings and to do everything else. But he said, "What's it going to look like? Not everybody knows I don't wear a sign on my back at the wedding that says, you know, my father absolved me of Yud Beis Chodesh. So I'm going to a wedding. Meanwhile, when everybody else asks me a shayla about going to weddings, I say, no, you're in Yud Beis Chodesh, not allowed to go. Then they're all going to say, hey, what's Shechta doing at the wedding? We know that he just sat Shiva for his father." So he said it's a bizayon to his father if he's going to listen to him, because it's just something that not everybody's going to really fully understand, that his father really meant it wholeheartedly. Not everyone's like my grandfather. So that was the consideration that my father had. So he did go to weddings here and there, but he used to try his best not to stay for the dancing, as any other Avel would try to do as well. There is a fascinating discussion. What about Kaddish? So the Sholem Meshim and other Achronim have a story where they say that at the time when there were major fights between the Hasidim and the Misnagdim, doesn't really happen so much anymore, but there were fights back then, very ideological disagreements about whether or not people should follow the way of the Hasidim. So there was a family who was real old-time Misnagdim, followers of the Vilna Gaon, who had one son who they said, in their opinion, went off the derech and became a Hasid. So, you know, not the worst thing in the world, but in those days they were very, very upset about it. So much so, he was so angry that his son, in his opinion, went off on his own way, that he made an instruction at the end of his life that son is not allowed to say Kaddish for me after I die. Why? Because he's going to say V'yatzmach per kane, because he davens nusach svard, and he's going to say Kaddish the way the Hasidim, So the Sholem Eshiv quotes a story. He says that the father was so angry, so bitter that his son became a chassid. He said, after I die, I don't want him saying Kaddish. Everybody else can, but that kid is not allowed to. So the kid didn't know what to do. So he sent the Shalat to the Sholem Eshiv to discuss whether or not a father has a right to be mochel on the Kaddish. And the Sholem Eshiv said, look, he's a fool. The father's a fool because the Kaddish is clearly only meant to be something that is going to elevate the neshama of your father. So he doesn't want the elevation. I would say it's a foolish choice on his part. I don't think it makes sense. But if your father really tells you not to say Kaddish, so okay, you want to listen to him, listen to him. Or Sholem Eshiv said the better thing to do is just leave out v'yatzmach perkanei. Go daven in an Ashkenaz shul and you'll say Kaddish the way that the Ashkenazim say Kaddish. There's nothing to worry about. I know that my father tells the story about a very prominent rabbi in New York who once asked him a shaila that he said, I love my father so much, I want to say Kaddish the entire 12 months. I don't want to stop at month 11. The minute is we stop at month 11, he says, I want to say Kaddish the whole time because I love him so much. My father said that's the biggest sign of bizayon to your father. Why? So he said, because the reason why we stop a month early is because the maximum time that you can suffer in Gehenna is 12 months. So we need the Aliyas HaNeshama for the entire time that a person might be suffering. Why do we stop at 11 months? Because we say, we assume that our parent is not the biggest Russia in the world. They're not going to suffer 12 months in Gehenna. So we stop after 11 months. We assume they're already finished with their punishment and everything's okay. They don't need our help anymore. They don't need our assistance. So a child comes along and says, I love my parents so much, I want to say Kaddish to 12 months. You're basically, ostensibly what you're saying is that you believe that your parent is such a horrible Russia that they need your Kaddish for the 12 months. That's not an appropriate thing to say. And that really would not be a wise thing for a child to make a decision to do, because the Kaddish is really said on behalf of the schus of the Nifter, and we assume that the maximum the Nifter can suffer is only 12 months, but we assume most of our parents are probably not going to be suffering 12 months because they were not considered to be, in our opinion, or in God's opinion, the greatest Rishayim in their lifetimes, therefore they don't need the 12 months of Kapara. 11 would be sufficient.